Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing us the news behind the news, the story behind the story, and hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the first hour, they're the views of Mrs. Kitty Worthman, who's really been our guest in the past, who has an amazing book she's written about her experiences living in Hitler's hell during the Second World War. But this evening we're not going to be talking about the Holocaust and the terrible things that happened at that time. We're going to be talking about what's really going on in Europe today as far as the European Union is concerned. And Mrs. Worthman was recently over in Europe talking to the people there who are very, very concerned about the fact that the countries of Europe are losing their sovereignty because of the policies of the European Union. Europe is becoming a centralized dictatorship over the objection of the people, and it doesn't really matter, of course, what the people want. There seem to be a group of elite there that have a different agenda, a different worldview. So with that as the background, Mrs. Worthman, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
It will be my pleasure.
You go right ahead, and why don't you tell our listeners, of course, how it was that you happened to be in Europe recently and what you found when you were there.
First, I will say, those who are ignorant of history will walk blindly into the future. And this is exactly what is happening in Europe. Not only once, but twice. It happened under Hitler. Nobody listened. Nobody believed. And they were enslaved. And now, with the European Union, the same thing is happening again. Again, it is the elite who are planning a new world order. By merging the European Union, there are no borders anymore. They're open borders, and anybody can come in. And also...
Hold up, though. We'll be right back in just a moment here.
Yes.
Well, Ms. Worthman, you go right ahead with your story there.
The conversion of their money has been nothing but a trickery. The euro was came into being on January 1st, 2022, and everybody believed, or they were told, that it would be economically very adventurous. And also the euro would have a bigger buying power and all the good things they were being told. And about 6 months later, when the German mark was converted into the euro, until about 6 months later, their pensions stayed about the same amount. And all of a sudden, the people who had good jobs, worked for the government or in the private sector, and they retired, and they were on their pensions and their savings. And all of a sudden, they discovered that...
Okay, go right ahead.
Their pensions were 50% less because it was converted into the euro. But the buying power was not as high as it was under the German mark. And I just give you an example. under the German mark, if you went to a good restaurant and you ate a good meal, and that was about 15 German marks, and now it is 15 euros. Converted, that means it's 30 marks. So their pension they could live very well on their pension. They could go at least twice a year, going on vacation, and they had no money worry, none whatsoever. They were in excellent financial status. And now, with the conversion, their pension are only half as worth. And also, their bank account is 50% less.
So basically, then, they've lost half of the value of their lifelong savings, is that it?
Exactly.
Hold on, darling. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Mrs. Werthmann is saying is that the people of Germany were living quite well. Now, was this both Germany and Austria, or is it just Germany?
Most Austria, everywhere in Europe.
All right, of course, the people were living quite comfortably. You were retired, you had money in the bank, you were getting a regular pension. You could certainly, afford to eat out at times. You could take trips a couple of times a year. The people of Europe were really prospering under the old system. And then, of course, they got into the euro, and they were told the euro was going to be wonderful for them. They were going to be able to actually have free trade, and things were going to be cheaper. And, well, what the people of Germany and Austria found is when they converted their marks, their German and Austrian currency, into the euro currency, they lost half of the value. So that a dinner which previously would have cost them, say, 15 marks, now cost them 30 euros. And, of course, all of their savings that they had in the bank immediately lost half of their value. And so suddenly the people of Germany and Austria, the retirees there, thinking, of course, that they were going to live comfortably throughout the rest of their lives, have found that they've lost half of the value of their savings, half of the value of their pensions. And, of course, that their leaders had simply lied to them. Well, how do the people there feel about this sort of thing? Are they a little upset about it?
They're very angry. They're very angry. I interviewed most of them were senior citizens.
Right.
Friends and family and other people. Professional people. They were professional people. And what everyone was telling me, that it really was a devaluation of the money.
And of course, this is exactly what would happen here in the United States if we were to go into Amero, or if we were to unite America with Mexico and Canada. Why, we'd raise the value of the dollar up to that of the Mexican peso and impoverish our people. But they're not going to tell the American people ahead of time what's going to happen, certainly. Now, what are the people of Europe going to do about it, though? Are they going to vote the scoundrels out who lied to them?
Are they simply going to just go along and say,
well, there's nothing we can do. They've lied to us, but, what can we do? We're old.
The sad part of this is that a lot of the senior retired people are on food stamps and welfare, because they absolutely cannot live on their pension as it is now. And they're not going to increase their pension because the economy in Germany is so bad. They have about 13.6 unemployment. And this is also the very reason, because from years and years ago, when they let the people who they called guest workers from Turkey, from Yugoslavia, or former Yugoslavia, Italy, and from everywhere, they let them come in and do their menial work, and they cannot get rid of them. They are taking the jobs of the local people. They have now four generations of guest workers whose family have come in, the aunts and the uncles and the cousins, and many, many children, they're part of Europe now, or part of Germany.
Now, are many of these people Muslims, or do they come from Muslim countries, or what
yes.
countries did they
yes.
come from?
And in almost in every town is a mosque.
Right.
All over the place, and they're running for office. And they're crowding their local people out of the political process.
And, of course, the thing is, they're having lots of children. The Germans are not having lots of
nope.
children. And so that what they're really doing is simply replacing the population of Europe with Muslims, and these countries traditionally Christian have bought into this whole idea of overpopulation. Families are not having children, and soon Germany and France and most of Europe will simply be an extension of the Muslim faith. And rather than conquering with the sword, they're simply conquering with population and with a ballot. So how do the Germans feel about this? Don't they realize what they've done?
Well, it's too late. It's too late. The horse is out of the barn. You cannot lock the gate. It's a done deal. There is no way that they can do anything about it. They cannot get rid of those people. They're there. They have their own houses. They own businesses. And they're taking over.
So what is the attitude of the German population, the Austrian population, as you talked to about this aspect of it, that simply by immigration the Muslims have taken Europe?
In a nutshell, everybody is angry. The people are angry.
But don't they know that their leaders have betrayed them? Their leaders
yes.
have a different agenda. Their leaders have no
yes.
loyalty to Austria or to Germany. But they are these part of this whole globalist internationalist movement?
Yes, absolutely. Nobody is smiling. Everybody is angry. Everybody is angry. And everybody is... They're certainly are talking about, but there's nothing they can do. There's nothing they can do.
No, can't they vote their politicians out of office?
Well, it is very difficult because the media is so far, if you think the media here is to the left, it is to the left over there. And then the only American channel what they get is CNN.
Well, that's certainly not much help. And of course, the thing is that really we here in America, we say that, the media is to the left. And of course, you talk to the people on the left and they say the media is controlled by on the right. And the truth of the matter is that the media is controlled by the globalists, who are certainly neither left nor right. They use the left, they use the right. They create conservative organizations and liberal organizations. They control the pro-war movement. They control the anti-war movement. You always want a controlled opposition. And I'm sure they're doing exactly the same thing over in Europe because, of course, our globalist movement interlocks with their globalist movement. And if you are able to control the media, you can control what people think. And that's why I'm sure that most of the people over in Europe are confused, and certainly so many people here in America are confused.
Not only confused, they have not been taught history in school.
Right.
All these young people who have grown up in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, they have not learned about history. When I talk to the young people over there, they didn't even know who Hitler was. They were not taught. They kept that under wraps. They were not told that in school.
And what a tragedy it is not to have learned from the past and, of course, learned what motivated Adolf Hitler and why so many good people actually supported him. And, of course, Hitler never could have come to power without tremendous help from the West and from the industrialists in Germany. And he was simply a manifestation of the powerful spiritual forces that were working at that time. And that, of course, explains the Holocaust, which, of course, really doesn't make sense if you look at it logically. But if you understand the spiritual forces behind the Holocaust, and then, of course, the inhumanity, the crass indifference to human suffering, all makes tremendous sense. Well, certainly, as you come back to America, do you see some of the same things happening here?
Well, of course I do, and I just like to quote something that May 16, 2002, the former Mexican president, Vicente Fox, gave a speech at the Club 21 in Madrid, Spain. And this is what he said. Eventually, our long-range objective is to establish with the United States, but also with Canada, our regional partner, an ensemble of connection and institutions similar to those created by the European Union.
And when did Vicente Fox make that statement? Do you have it actually recorded there someplace?
May 16, 2002.
Oh, I see.
In Madrid, Spain, at Club 21.
Oh, well, of course, they have no question at all that this is exactly what they want.
Exactly, that's what they want. And that is why then, I believe it was April 23, I believe, in Waco, Texas, that our President Bush met with Vicente Fox and the former President of Canada, Mr. Martin. And they made the agreement of the Prosperity and Security Act, literally bypassing Congress and our Constitution.
But of course, this has always been the dream of the globalists, and the plan is really very simple. To, of course, get people, nations, to give up their sovereignty in the name of free trade and prosperity. And by establishing a union, a European Union, a North American Union, a South American Union, an African Union, an Asian Union, an Arab Union, and as all these countries give up their sovereignty, and of course then you begin to mold them into governmental entities with their own currencies, with their own legislature, not answerable to the people at all, but answerable to the global elite. And then, of course, take all of those groups and mold them into a one world government. That is the plan. You can see it being carried out today. It's been described by Zygmunt Brzezinski, and if anybody wants verification, we'll be glad to provide it. The problem is that our leaders are simply lying to the American people. And, of course, they ridicule and demonize anybody like Mrs. Werthmann or myself or Dr. Corsi, who's a frequent guest, tries to warn the people that we have leaders in our country who hate America are intent upon its destruction, destruction of our sovereignty. Well, Mrs. Werthmann, I really think you probably value freedom here a lot more than most Americans do, because you know what it would be like and what it was like to live without freedom. The big problem we have in America is that most people have always lived with freedom, and I don't think they value it as much as you and I do.
The greatest gift ever given to me was the freedom of America, to live in freedom and security. But is it going to last? We don't know.
We don't know.
The other interesting part is also, why is former Soviet Premier Mikhail Gorbachev sitting in London, just waiting for the things to happen? It's also very interesting. Why did actually, was it, when you talk to the German people over there, they think Mr. Gorbachev is wonderful. He's a wonderful man who gave them back East Germany, and they treat him like he's a hero. And I tried to explain to them it was not Gorbachev who tore down the wall. It was our President Reagan. Oh, no, they say, he was only a Hollywood actor. That's how confused the people are over there.
Well, do you think that the average German really remembers what happened in Nazi Germany? Were most of these people younger people? Would they have been around at the time of when Hitler took power and realized, of course, the danger of the centralization of power? Certainly Gorbachev has referred to the European Union. Mikhail Gorbachev has referred to the European Union
exactly.
as the new European Soviet.
Exactly.
Of course, what they're doing in Europe today is simply centralized planning. They're establishing a massive centralized bureaucracy. I don't know if you know Mr. Bukovsky, but Mr. Bukovsky's a Russian dissident who's actually living in England today. And he sees what's happening in Europe and realizes this is exactly what happened in the Soviet Union when he was living there. And he's written extensively. We even carry a little pamphlet he's written called the EUSSR. EUSSR. A takeoff on the European Union. And, of course, joining together with the concepts of the Soviet Union and establishing a dictatorship in Europe. And most Europeans really don't understand that the European Parliament is not democratic. It is controlled by a massive bureaucracy. The duly elected representatives are only figureheads there to give people an idea, the impression that the people can somehow, through their elected representatives, influence policy, whereas nothing could be further from the truth. Do you think that the average person in Germany or Austria realizes that?
I remember in the 1980s, I had a meeting in Vermont with Solzhenitsyn, not personally, only by phone. He would not receive anybody personally, but I had the opportunity to talk to him through a congressman with him on the phone.
Oh, you'll hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Mrs. Kitty Werthmann. And Mrs. Werthmann came to America after having suffered under Adolf Hitler during the Second World War, and she and her mother were able to escape and come here. But, you know, she is simply talking about what's happening in Europe today, an example of simply the loss of freedom under the European Union. And what they have established is what Gorbachev refers to, Mikhail Gorbachev, the former brutal dictator of Russia, as the European Soviet. And Mrs. Werthmann is saying that she had an opportunity at one time to talk, at least on the telephone, through a congressman to Solzhenitsyn, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And what did you talk about?
What he told me, if the countries don't wake up soon, the Western civilization will be lost forever.
And I think Solzhenitsyn was absolutely right. In fact, we actually have the talk that he gave before the United Auto Workers back in 1975, and you'll find a summary of that in my, I believe it's the April newsletter, where we talk about the communist-capitalist alliance. The communist-capitalist alliance, that was his term. And he recognized how the West had kept the brutal, tyrannical government of the Russia in power all those years. And I remember another thing Solzhenitsyn said, that, you know, the trouble is the Russia went communist because the Russian people had forgotten God. And I really think the same thing is happening here. We have an awful lot of people who talk about God and talk about God, but I think they're talking about a different God, because certainly our leaders could not be doing what they're doing and supporting terror, torture and aggressiveness and aggressive wars and preemptive strikes and possibility of using nuclear weapons. No person who embraces scriptures and the teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ could possibly embrace what is being embraced by our leaders today.
Well, I believe that Alexander Solzhenitsyn was absolutely right. And even though he lived in the United States, in Vermont. He lived in a house with an 8-foot wall around. He had police dogs patrolling the grounds of his home. He had security guards, and he could not receive anybody because he was under death threat of the HEP constantly. Even though he was in the United States under our protection, and he still lived in fear.
Well, I think anybody, of course, who's ever lived under communism lives in that fear, and if they really wanted to get him here, they would simply kill him, and nothing would ever be done about it any more than the murder of Alexander Litvinenko over there, and the former KGB agent in London, who was killed, I believe it was October of last year, by the Soviets,
right.
And nothing's ever going to come of that. That was the ordered by Putin, and those of you who haven't read the book, Blowing Up Russia, by Litvinenko and Yuri Veltsinsky, who interviewed a number of times. I mean, there's no question. They simply kill people that get in the way.
And incidentally, the HEP agent who killed this man, he will be the next president of Russia.
In fact, he's actually running. He's one of the five candidates running for president, isn't he?
Yes. And I'm sure that President Putin will certainly see to it that he will become the president of the Soviet Union, that they can make their plans accordingly.
And for those of people who do not understand, Yuri, Alexander Litvinenko was a lieutenant colonel in the KGB and then in the FSB. And because he had actually broken with the Soviets and actually revealed the fact that the bombing in Moscow, where they'd blown up three apartment houses and killed 300 Russians as a justification, used that as a justification for going to war with Chechnya, that wasn't carried out by the Chechenian rebels. That was actually carried out by the Soviet secret police called the FSB. And that's the story of Blowing Up Russia. The book is a bestseller here in the United States. And his reward was they killed him. They simply poisoned him to death, a terrible a way to die with polonium-210. And, of course, there's no question it was done by the KGB. But this is the way the real world acts. And I'm sure Solzhenitsyn was very fortunate to survive because, of course, we're dealing with ruthless people. We're thoroughly backed by people in key positions in our own government. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Mrs. Kitty Werthmann. And did Solzhenitsyn tell you anything else when you had that opportunity to communicate with him?
Well, he was very frustrated that the American foreign policy was totally different what it should be, that people in the United States don't realize the threat of communism. They think it's like an organization, you know, a social organization or something. And he could not believe that people here would not see the threat of a world government. They think it's fantasy.
Yeah.
Now, the same thing when President Bush was up in Canada just recently, and the Canadians don't like the Prosperity and Security Act either. They realize, you know, nothing good come about. So when they demonstrated up there in Canada against the Prosperity and Security Act, you know what President Bush said? It's all just a conspiracy.
Well, of course, this is the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which is another name for this effort to bind together into one community or one nation, Canada, the United States, and Mexico. SPP.gov, you can go to their website and you'll find out what they're doing. We carry an excellent book written by Dr. Corsi called The Late Great USA. The Late Great USA explains what this is really all about. There is a plan to end American sovereignty. Of course, they're not going to tell the American people until it's already a fait accompli. And then, of course, by lying to the American people and demonizing and attacking and vilifying anybody who tries to tell the people what's going on and accusing them of being conspiracy nuts and being delusional, the sort of terms that Rush Limbaugh would use to discredit anybody who tries to tell the people what's going on. But then Rush Limbaugh is very well paid for his betrayal of America, or his support for the globalist movement, and anybody who talks about the Council on Foreign Relations, or Rush Limbaugh's very good friend, the Rockefellers, and their effort to bring about this new world economic order, is immediately either cut off from Rush Limbaugh's programs or simply silenced. And people have to understand we're being lied to and deceived. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Mrs. Curdy Worthman, and we do carry her book. What was it? Was it Out of Hitler's Hell? Was that the title? Your book. What was the title?
The title? No, yes. There is not a book. There is a brochure.
A brochure.
There is a brochure, and what it is... Dictatorship in 5 years.
A dictatorship in 5 years. Now,
yes.
Who wrote the brochure?
I did.
All right. But didn't you write a book earlier?
Well, that is in the making. My daughter is a conservative journalist, and she is writing. And in a couple of years, it will be done.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, so you have a brochure. How can people get your information?
They can write to me, Kitty Worthman, 1604 Hilltop Drive, Pierre, spelled P-I-E-R-R-E, and the South Dakota, zip code 57501. Sent a self-addressed stamped envelope and $3, and I sent them the brochure.
All right, fine. And, of course, you're very, very concerned about what's going on as far as the loss of our freedom here.
Well, as a long, long-time lobbyist in our state capital, I see a lot of things, centralization of government. I saw twice, legislation introduced to merge our 66 counties in South Dakota into 15. Can you imagine what a bureaucracy this would be?
Well, of course, this is really what they want to do. They want to take away a local control.
Local government.
Right.
Get rid of local government and increase the state government by leaps and bounds.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of people calling in. Would you like to take some telephone calls?
Yes, I would.
All right. Our telephone number then is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to talk to Mrs. Kitty Worthman about certainly what's going on and the crisis movement to do away with the sovereignty of our nation. And so if you give us a call, we'd be glad to have you on the line. And, of course, so that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And Cynthia, what happens when you tell people this story? Do you think that they are aware of what you're talking about?
Well, they're not aware of it, but it's like a jigsaw puzzle with all the pieces. And once they hear me and I tell them, they know how to put the jigsaw puzzle together. I've been told that when I give my speech, I've been told that over and over again, they know something is terrible wrong, but they cannot, they have the pieces, but they don't know how to put them together.
Well, I think that's so important that people begin to understand what the Security and Prosperity Partnership is really all about. It is simply the destruction of the sovereignty of our nation, the destruction of our constitutional guarantees of individual freedom under God, and replacing it with this idea of a democratic institution, you know, where everybody gets to vote for our representatives, but they really have no power at all. Everything is controlled by the central planners, the massive bureaucracy. Well, let's go to Eric, who's calling us from Portland. Hi, Eric. How are you doing tonight?
Fine. Thanks, Dan. I met Kitty at the Prophecy Club meeting here in Portland. I gave her some political artwork, I guess you could say. I don't know if you remember that, Kitty?
Yes, I remember it very, very well.
Okay, did you have a question to offer, I guess?
Well, the way I see it, it seems that the people that propagate the ideology of wealth redistribution or Marxism have at the same time been propagating another faction with the ideology of fighting the people that are for wealth redistribution by being for less wealth redistribution. Not no wealth redistribution, but less wealth redistribution. In other words, the secret writings of Karl Marx, which are locked up in the Kremlin. Are you aware of those, Dr. Stan?
I'm not specifically, but I know certainly a great deal about Karl Marx. And of course, he was, to what we think we know about Karl Marx, this isn't true. He was a Satanist. He was actually employed by a secret society known as the League of the Just to write the Communist Manifesto to create an enemy. And then, of course, we could rally the people against this enemy because they were pushing socialism. But the very people who were financing Karl Marx, who was opposing socialism, were the very people who were financing socialism. This is the most incredible thing, and this was beautifully brought out by the Rees Committee, which investigated the great tax-exempt foundations, the great capitalist foundations, which were actually financing communism and socialism in the United States, and pushing wealth redistribution, but not their wealth. It was the wealth of the middle class. And they have this wonderful system of creating both sides of the argument. Controlled opposition, so there really is no opposition to their program, which has always been towards a one-world government, a one-world religion, and a one-world leader. So, anything else, Eric?
Well, does that make sense to you that, for instance, the Republican Party was formed by the same people that created communism?
They created both political parties. Or at least they dominated, whether they created it or not, they certainly dominated the Republican Party today, which is pushing all sorts of socialist programs, just like the Democrats are doing. Actually, of course, the Republican Party originated just before the Civil War. But certainly the people on the other side have actually taken control of it, and this is covered in Professor Quigley's wonderful book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, where he tells about how members of the Skull and Bones long ago came up with the idea of controlling both political parties, and then, of course, letting the people go to the polls every 4 years and vote for the candidate of their choice, but nothing would really change. You'll find that on pages 1247 and 1248 of Professor Quigley's book, and Professor Quigley was, of course, Bill Clinton's mentor. The book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, long suppressed but now available from Radio Liberty.
So why don't we get rid of the Marxism?
Well, of course, Marxism is simply a tool. I mean, Marxism is an idea, and of course, on one hand, they talk about redistribution of the wealth. But, of course, the very people who are pushing that are the very, very wealthy. And they don't want to get rid of their wealth. It's your wealth they want to redistribute. Hey, thanks so very much, Eric.
Thank you.
And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you'd like to ask Mrs. Werthmann, Mrs. Kitty Werthmann, a question, and Mrs. Werthmann, do you work with the Eagle Forum, Kitty?
Yes, I do.
All right, fine. And
yes. I also would like to mention that the European Union is exactly the redistribution of the wealth, because it has to pull up those countries, Romania, Bulgaria, former Yugoslavia, who are economically not producing. And they and their wealth, you know, the European, the Germany and their wealth, they have to pull those countries up, and that is the, strictly the design of the European Union. Likewise, with our Security and Prosperity Act, we would have to pull Mexico up for, economically, and Canada, because the Canadian dollar certainly is not equal to the American dollar, and of course the peso, I mean, no way that you could have an equal exchange. No, you have to, it's designed to pull Mexico out of poverty.
But also, but in the process of doing that is to lower the living standards in this country as
yes.
well. So basically, of course, we'll raise the living standards in Mexico by lowering the living standards in the United States.
Right.
Incidentally,
right.
of course, the American dollar is falling very, very rapidly. It's part of the plan.
Well,
to the point where the Canadian dollar, which used to be about 60 cents, is now up to about 94 cents compared with the American dollar. And I fear very, very soon we'll surpass the value of the American dollar. As certainly as we devalue our currency, and in the process, we steal the value of the savings of the American people. We destroy the value of their currency and what they have there in their pension funds, in their insurance policies, in their CDs, their annuities, their stocks and their bonds is all going to be wiped out. And the average American one day is going to wake up and suddenly realize they've been lied to, and then it'll be, of course, far too late.
Just like what is happening in Germany and Austria,
right.
in, over there, when, you know, they were being told, you know, the story, you know, how wonderful it will be to have open borders, you can travel without a passport, and you have a common currency, you don't have to exchange at the border, and the people like to travel over there because they have 6 weeks a year paid vacation. So they are traveling all the time. And that's, they were being told how wonderful the European Union will be with open borders and all that. And what a trickery it was.
Well, now what does gasoline would do over there? I mean, certainly, my understanding is gasoline is probably $5 or $6 a gallon over
it's
there.
It's more than that.
Really, is it?
It's more than that. I did not drive a car, but, everybody was complaining how expensive gasoline is and everything else, because the American dollar is only worth 72 cents. And I remember there were times under the German mark that you got, when you exchanged your American dollar, you got $100, $400 marks.
I can remember where I died as well, but that was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
$4 to the dollar, right.
And then it trickled down, little by little. And it's always, when things happen, it happens gradually, so people don't notice it so much.
Well, of course, the mark is really maintaining its strength fairly well as the dollar keeps falling and falling and falling. You say the dollar gives you how many marks at the present time?
For $100, I think I got 61 euros.
$100, 61 euros. It used to be that the dollar was worth $1.30 to the euro. In other words, you'd get $130 for every euro. And
yeah.
now you get 60. So the dollar has fallen very dramatically. But
yeah.
the average American really doesn't understand.
No.
There's an organized effort to destroy the value of our currency, and by so doing, of course, you destroy the very stability of our society. And the average American doesn't realize what's going on any more than the average person in Germany or Austria.
No, they don't. No, they don't. It amazes me. Of course, most of the people don't read. They watch their television, and then their sports programs, and all life is directed around athletic events. And the same thing in Europe. It's athletic events. Go, and the same thing here. There is more athletic events than anything else, and that is actually designed for the American public not to read or see anything serious.
Well, I think it's really more of a diversion, because, of course, if the people could really understand what was going on, they would be furious with their leaders to realize that they are betraying them and, of course, stealing their lifelong earnings. But, of course, this is the way the system really works. And, of course, what they've done here in the United States and what they've done over in Europe is simply by the process of inflation. They have gradually, of course, eroded the value of our currency. Now, things are not quite as bad in Germany as they are here. Actually, what the American people would not understand is that the central bank, the Federal Reserve System, was established in the United States in 1913 to give us a stable dollar, so the dollar would always buy the same thing. They've destroyed over 96% of the value of the 1913 dollar. And they're going to destroy the rest of it if we give them a chance. Since 1971, when the U.S. went off the currency, they have increased the amount of money in circulation 12-fold. And they've increased the federal debt 19-fold. 19 times increase in the federal deficit here in the United States, in the last 36 years. And anybody would like to verify that, you give us a call. We'll send you the pages from the congressional testimony of Alan Greenspan. And certainly as Ron Paul was questioning Alan Greenspan back in the year 2005. The average American does not understand what's happening. It's happening so slowly, he is totally unaware of it. What can we do about what's going on?
Well, the best thing is if people who are really concerned about, read the book by Dr. Jerome Corsi, Amazon.com. That book explains everything. And it's written by a man of high character. He is a graduate of the Harvard School, and he discovered all this by filing Freedom of Information Act.
Right.
And they had to give him the documentation of this whole thing with Mexico and Canada.
And of course the book is called The Late Great USA.
Yes.
The Late Great USA. So I certainly agree with Mrs.
That's what people need to read.
Right, it's an excellent, excellent book, and we do have a four-tape set that includes interviews with Dr. Corsi, called, of course, The North American Community, The Demise of National Sovereignty. The North American Community, The Demise of National Sovereignty, and The Late Great USA. Our guest has been Mrs. Kitty Werthmann. Well, Kitty, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What is the message you would like to leave with our listeners tonight?
The message would be keep reading serious literature. Discount everything what the news media is telling you. Listen to conservative publications, and above all, read the book by Dr. Jerome Corsi.
How old were you when you came to the United States?
I was 22.
Oh, see, well, of course, you'd seen, of course. Now, were you actually living in Germany under Hitler?
In Austria.
I was living
in Austria under Hitler's brutal regime, and after World War II, when that was over, I lived for 3 years under Soviet communist occupation.
Right. And then, of course, how were you able to get to the United States?
I immigrated.
I see. Okay. You didn't have any difficulty coming in at that time then?
No. My family were totally anti-Nazi, and, of course, everybody had to be very quiet about it. Otherwise, everybody would have been arrested. And because of my family's standing, I had no problem to get a visa to come to the United States.
Well, I'm certainly glad you did, and I'm certainly glad you're here and you're going around and talking to people and trying to get them to understand that freedom is not free, and if they're not involved, then, of course, the other side is simply going to win by default. And there really are people out there who have a different worldview, who really do not believe in individual freedom. How long do you think we have, if the American people don't get involved in this battle?
Well, the Security and Prosperity Act is a five-year, five-year span. By 2010, it will be, if nothing is being done about, a bill currently is in Congress right now to rescind all that, but that all depends what the Congress is going to do about. But if not, by 2010, we're going to be integrated with Mexico and Canada.
Amen to that. Well, God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. We'd love to get you onto some of our other programs that I'll be calling off the air to see if we can get you on to tell your story to our other audiences. Good night and God bless.
God bless. God bless America.
Amen to that. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Kirti Werthmann, who, of course, had come from Austria to the United States when she was a young woman, and values the freedom that she has here because she had lived under Hitler's tyranny in Austria, and then, of course, under the communist tyranny. Certainly, if you want to understand what's really happening, if you want to understand who it was who financed Adolf Hitler, let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and, of course, Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. To understand the relationship between the communists and the people who control our government, you need to get our little pamphlet called The Communist-Capitalist Alignment. The Communist-Capitalist Alliance. And, of course, it's a takeoff on a phrase that Solzhenitsyn used in his speech before the United Auto Workers in 1975. And, of course, it's a compilation of three of our newsletters, four of our newsletters, actually. The Communist-Capitalist Alignment. You need to get that, you need to read it, and you need to pass it out far and wide. Because communism has been financed and helped and supported from the United States since its inception, which doesn't make sense unless, of course, there's another force out there that people don't recognize, and that's the spiritual force we talk about so frequently, of course, that has been hidden from the American people. And that's why you really would want to hear my talk on the Forbidden Secret and get the DVD that goes along with that, it's DVD, and then, of course, there's the syllabus. Now, certainly, we recommend very strongly Jerome Corsi's book, The Late Grace USA, that goes into the whole idea of the Security and Prosperity Partnership and shows you the government documents that are being actively suppressed, but which Dr. Corsi was able to get under the Freedom of Information Act. Then you'll want to get our four-tape set on the North American Community, The Demise of National Sovereignty. That's a four-tape or four-CD set. We have all of the information and anything that we have actually created, why you have our permission to copy and reduplicate. So Remember our telephone number, if you'd like to reach us, is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I want to remind you that we do actually have a scheduled all-day conference here in the Monterey Bay area on the 28th of October, and we've got a great lineup of speakers. Program's going to begin at 8 o'clock in the morning, go till 5:30 in the evening. We do hope that many of you will be able to come. Again, our telephone number, if you'd like to get a reservation, either for to come or for the hotels, and the hotel rooms will only be at their special cost for another week to 10 days, and then you're going to have to pay the full fare if you're coming in. But of course, our number here is 1-800-544-8927. Of course, we'll be serving lunch. We need to know how many people are coming so we can tell the Aptos Seascape Golf Course people. But it's a lovely and beautiful spot. And, of course, we'll have a great time. We always do. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. The date, October the 28th. That's a Sunday. But we put it on a Sunday because we had a so much better turnout last year. There were many people who couldn't make it on a Saturday. So then, of course, if you've not yet, of course, seen the DVDs, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, or the DVD Riddles in Stone. And both of these are award-winning DVDs. The first one's about 2.25 hours. The second one's almost 3 hours long. But tremendous interviews, tremendous amount of information there. And, of course, a very dramatic presentation. Both of these have won awards for excellence. But they tell you the part of the history that no one will ever tell you. And that is that when America was founded, there were two forces here. One was the Christian, and the other was the occult. That's the eternal battle that has been with us since the beginning of recorded time. And so please pray for America and pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty. Thank you. again. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring him. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls out across America ordinarily, but right now I ask you to hold your calls, not put them in unless we specifically ask for them, because we have us on the line our good friend Reverend Thomas Horn. We've known Tom for a long time. He's written a couple of books on spiritual warfare and the gods that walk among us. And more recently, he's actually put up a wonderful website called the Raiders website, one of the finest looking ones we have up there on the internet. And he's actually written a book. What's the title of that book, Tom?
Well, now we have a brand new book called Nephilim Stargates. And that's it's actually I would say it's the hard science and history behind the book that you have that people can get from you that's called The Ahriman Gate.
All right, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit. Now, is the new book available?
The new book is available now for pre-order. It will not actually be in print until July 1.
All right, what's it about?
And I will say, and I'm very happy about this, that it's already in the top 1,000 books at Amazon, it's not even going to be in print for about 4 weeks. I'm really excited about that. Well, of course, you know, Dr. Monteith, the interesting thing behind this this book is that it's a result of the research that we were doing when we were writing the book, The Ahriman Gate. We wanted to make the science in that book believable. So it required us to take a look at how does biotechnology and transgenics and genetic modification, how would these sciences actually be applied in a real-world way today to modify creatures, and what might the results of that be? And, of course, in our novel, The Ahriman Gate, we put a biblical prophetic slant on that in that it could be used to resurrect biblical Nephilim, extinct Nephilim. And, you know, Dr. Monteith, the interesting thing about being on your show is that this is the second book that I wrote as a result partly of being on your show some years ago.
Really?
Yeah, I told you this once before, but it's been maybe a year or so ago I first started out maybe 12, 13 years ago, and I noticed these sciences, and I read a story one day about transgenic science, and I had never even heard the term transgenics before. But in this was like a Reuters story or something, and they were talking about how that year fully one-fourth of all federal research grants were going to go towards transgenic science. And I thought, well, you know, if a fourth of our taxpayers' dollars are going into this science, I should know something about it. I mean, our taxpayers' dollars, that is, that are earmarked for grants of that nature. I should know something about what this even means. And I started looking into it, and I was actually astonished by the idea that we had an interest in crossing species barriers and actually merging the DNA of one species with the DNA of another species. And this struck me as something that not only was not something that would have been allowed for in either the creation model, or let's say you don't subscribe to the creation model and you're just an evolutionist, it also would not have been allowed for in evolution, that we were doing something that was outside of the natural order, regardless of what that might mean, and so that it should be something that would be a concern to everybody.
Hold that thought, John. We'll be back here in just a minute. I will tell you, every listener should be concerned, because these people are playing God. Go ahead, pick up the story there.
Well, we were talking about how people should be concerned about biotechnology, and anyway, I started looking into this cloning, transgenics, And this was back early, 12 years ago or so, when the term transgenic was a brand new term. There was no real conversation going on about funding for Stemline. The creating of these different chimeric human-animal embryonic specimens for the use in studying medicines. I mean, these are all relatively brand new terms that came out of this science that I first started looking into. Well, anyway, this raised questions to me, and I was very concerned, Dr. Monteith, as you know, that I am a person of faith, and it struck me as odd that none of the leaders of the faith community were talking about what some of the ethical issues might be that would be raised out of this science. And so I started looking into it. I did a little research. I wrote a couple of editorials. One of those editorials got picked up and received fairly wide publication. And it was out of the blue that Cal Thomas, the syndicated columnist for the LA Times, had read that article, and he contacted me. And at that time, he was the host of CNN's Crossfire, and they talked about this a little bit. And he wanted to share with me his opinion that what I had written to him was evidence that the world had to be winding down, that we were entering a quickening time, a quickening of events that foreshadowed end-time biblical prophecy in his point of view. Well, I had just read his email to me, and at that same time, I had been picked up by Cloud 10 Pictures, wanted me to promote a new film that they put out called Deceived. And I remember that you called me. Now, I had been on your show years earlier with my first book, Spiritual Warfare, but I hadn't been on your show for a long time. You called me out of the blue because you were participating in their promotion of that film that had Louis Gossett Jr. and Judd Nelson. And so I had just read this thing from Cal Thomas, and I went on your show, and I asked you, you know, in this movie from Cloud 10 Pictures called Deceived, this person in this movie starts developing a telekinesis as a result of being altered by their involvement with these shadowy, invisible beings. And that I had asked you, as a retired medical doctor, if you believed that we would actually enter into a time where we would start developing these post-human, transhuman-like abilities like telekinesis, if you thought there was anything to that. Could this happen through human enhancement using the sciences of transgenics and biotech and genetic modification and so on? And that you, at the time, you had actually just returned from...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Tom Horn. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Tom was just saying that it was some time ago when we talked to Tom, maybe a decade ago, and I was helping to promote a DVD and VHS called Deceived with Leo Gossett, actor, and it was all about the military and how the military was getting into the supernatural, trying to tap into the other dimension. And, of course, at that time, the question was raised about this new type of genetic engineering, a transgenic engineering, when we begin to create new species and insert, of course, animal genes into humans and human genes and animals. And so pick up the stories there.
Well, and the fact that the more I was researching this material, the more concerned I was becoming about what some of the ethical or philosophical ramifications might be, and that nobody was talking about it, and that when I was on your show, I asked you about it, and you certainly had been thinking about it, and you had just come back, and I can't remember this story in detail, but you had just come back from a convention of some kind where there were different people who are still involved in the most current advances in medical technology and that sort of thing. And that there was something out of that convention that had led you to think that, you know, people, that our sciences were, in fact, moving in a direction that they were willing to start crossing these barriers, which we had never crossed before. And I went off that program with you that night, and I thought, this is astonishing to me that I write this one article and it gets a guy like Cal Thomas certainly should know what the current news is, and he had never heard about it. And I was able to verify that a fourth of all federal research grants that year were going to transgenic sciences, and then went on your show, and you had heard something about it, and you were very concerned about it. I thought, well, you know, somebody ought to be writing something about this, and they're not. And so I started compiling as many research papers, anything I could put my hands on, as well as also making contact with some of the actual people that were involved in this new cutting-edge biotech, anybody who was willing to talk to me. And along the way, I ran into a professor friend of mine who convinced me that to write this book, I should really write it as a novel so that it would have the widest possible exposure, because if I wrote it as a stuffy textbook of some kind, you know, there'd be fewer people that would want to read it, and that I then should weave into that story what some of my concerns were, which is what I did. It became the all-time best-selling book for the publishing house. It's got 50 five-star reviews. It's been number 23 of all books in the CBA market in the United States in the last year. So, I mean, the book has done very well. We're very happy about that. But the thing that was the most thrilling for me was what we were finding in the real research. The research behind this was astonishing, because it took me on a little trail that I wasn't ready for, in that I started looking at modern biotechnology. But as I was researching the cross-blending of species, that took me to a story where in ancient history there had been a time when these so-called gods came down, and they started tinkering with human and animal DNA, and they actually created for themselves offspring through this biotechnological tinkering with human and animal DNA, and this was called the Nephilim in the Bible. But I was finding this story through all these different ancient mythos, and it was just astonishing to me. It was almost as if we were looking at or retracing the actual first record in history of transgenic science, which had been conducted by these super intelligences who, for their own reasons, were the first people to open the Ahriman Gate. That's the title for my book. But I started wondering now, Dr. Monteith, if man, in his willingness today to play God, was actually repeating something, rushing back into a science that had been first introduced on Earth thousands of years ago, and that ultimately led to the judgment of God. And astonishingly, I found this record in all these ancient historical books, and all of them talked about these super intelligences that determined they were going to blend these various species to create for themselves some pathway into which they could extend themselves into our three-dimensional reality. And this led immediately and instantly to the judgment of God.
Now, of course, what you're really talking about is at the time in the days of Noah, when, of course, the sons of God came down and mated with women and created the devil. And these really were demonic beings, or perhaps fallen angels, I'm not sure which, but it was that, you know, cross-genics experimentation in those days that led to God to intervene and destroy everything on Earth. And of course, I really believe it's absolutely right. This is exactly what happened, and we're doing it all over again. And we were told in the scriptures, when the Lord was asked, "But what will be the signs of your coming?" And his remark is, "And in the days as it was in the days of Noah."
Right.
Go right ahead, Tom.
Well, you're absolutely right. So this huge question then was lingering before me. If it was demonic then, is it demonic now? If it led to judgment then, will it lead to judgment now? And if it brought about the incarnation of unusual beings that were only part human and part something else, and this astonishing story, I mean, anybody that, if you don't even include any of the extra biblical records, if you just look at the scripture, you see this model of God who is otherwise unwilling that any should perish. He's long-suffering, patient. He commands Israel to extend this opportunity for people to come in and to become proselytes. People from other nations can come in and have to be treated correctly. He didn't want people ill-treated that might try to find lodging in the camp of Israel. So you find this model of God, but boy, then all of a sudden when it comes to the Nephilim, it's kill them on the spot. If you see one, kill it. And it just illustrates that there was something entirely different. And the story then has to do with the methodology. What appeared to be a record of advanced science, in a way, what looked like traces of modern biotechnology, where in the Hebrew Bible, but also in the Assyrian, in the Egyptian, in the Greek, all these other great mythologies, this story exists of these gods who, in order to materialize, in order to take three-dimensional expression, for some reason, it required them to corrupt the creation, to change the creation, and to blend the various species in order to make this pathway, this portal through which they could extend themselves into our material world. For instance, one of the ancient texts, the book of Jasher, which is referred to in the Bible, in the book of Joshua 10 and also in 2 Samuel 1, the book of Jasher says this, in Jasher 4:18, it says, after the fallen angels went into the daughters of men, the sons of men began teaching the mixture of animals of one species with the other in order to provoke the Lord, end quote. And I started finding text after text like that that were supportive of the Genesis 6 story and that also not only corroborated it, but added this mix that these things were blending animals and humans. The very thing now, Dr. Monteith, that we're doing in laboratories in the United States, in Australia, and as of last week, I guess, we just got permission in the UK to start creating these embryonic specimens, which ultimately are going to lead to not just embryonic specimens, but the enhancement of the human species. A new stage is being called in human evolution. Our president's own Council on Bioethics has said this is what this is leading to, a post-human creation. It's where we're going. And yet, even in, of course, anybody who's read our novel, The Ahriman Gate, and anybody who reads the new book, Nephilim Stargates, the full title of that new book, by the way, it has a subtitle. The full title is Nephilim Stargates, and the subtitle is The Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers. Because we are speculating that all of what we are doing right now in biotechnology, not only ultimately and originally, led to the creation of Nephilim and then judgment from God, but that there is this prophetic possibility that these creatures are going to return again. And I found various places in the Bible that indicate that this could happen again in the end of time and could once again lead to judgment. And as you quoted a moment ago, Jesus saying, what shall be the signs of thy coming? As it was in the days of Noah. What was going on in the days of Noah could be happening again at the end of time. And what was going on in the days of Noah? These beings requiring this vital energy associated with three-dimensional life forms so that they could blend these beings and bring themselves through into our reality. They left their first estate. They came down and they somehow could join themselves with women and they brought themselves through into our reality and because of it faced a peculiar judgment from God.
And, you know, I think, Tom, if anybody who's ever studied the stories of alien abductions, of course, most people, Christians, sort of poo-poo this idea of alien abductions, and yet there seems to be a great deal of valid evidence that it has occurred. I believe these truly are demonic beings. I don't think they're from outer space at all, but so much of this involves sexual reproduction, obtaining sperm from men and eggs from women, as if these beings, these demonic beings, of course, want to experiment with reproduction, human reproduction, in defiance of God's laws, and somehow harness this so they can control it. So go right ahead.
Well, you're right. I mean, even and that was the other thing I found, that not only were there records in the ancient mythological records, not only were there sacred records which were part of the Bible, but there were also records down through time that were peculiar. And I noticed that some of the secular researchers, some of the better secular researchers, maybe guys like Jacques Vallée and others, who had not taken a particular position on what this might be, but they saw these parallels between biblical demonology and historical church demonology and what was happening in alien abduction.
And even though he wasn't a Christian, saw the metaphysical component of so much of what was going on, and probably the leading UFO expert of all time said, this is metaphysical from another dimension. Go right ahead, Tom.
Well, and it was, I think it was Jacques Vallée or John Keel, one of those guys, who first termed this phrase vital energy. Molecular matter associated with three-dimensional life forms seems to be required for some reason, maybe as a construct material, but by these beings who are abducting or tinkering with people who are being subjected to these alien abductions. And, you know, because I am a Christian, and I do talk about some of this subject matter, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be giving a one-and-a-half-hour lecture at the Roswell Festival this year, and the lecture is the same title as the title of my book, Nephilim, Stargates, the Year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers, where I will be discussing at length the very matter that you and I are talking about right now, that something has been happening down through time, and that it also might be related to what's going on in alien abduction, ufology, and things like that. And what I say to Christians or other people of faith is when they say they have a problem with the idea that these beings could create some alien body or something into which they're putting their spirit or some bizarre thing like that could be happening, which is sometimes reported, you know, through the harvesting of eggs and other matter where they're fusing themselves, their creation with our creation, they have a problem with the idea that these things could create. And what I've said is, no, they're not creating. It's the Creator alone stood in the beginning and spoke and said, let there be. That's the Hebrew word haya. And what it means is He alone has the power to command raw atomic nuclear energy to come from nothing and then to form itself into specified molecular form, whether it be a tree or a human or grass or whatever. He alone had the ability to speak into existence these things. However, once this matter was created and it came into its own molecular form, then these beings could do the same thing that scientists are doing in Australia and the United States and Canada the UK today, where they are blending these various species to create whole brand new life forms, things which neither creation nor evolution have allowed for, could have been done, manipulation by these so-called gods in order to construct for themselves some three-dimensional expression. In the Hebrew text, that's what it says, that they saw the daughters of men, that they were fit extensions. The sense there is that it was something that they used to bring themselves through into our reality, and it brought the judgment of God. Even in the book of Enoch and the Old Testament, the use of vital energy as a construct material for forming this dimensional pathway is evident. If you read the seventh chapter of the book of Enoch, it says that they not only sinned against the women, but they sinned against the animals. And that goes along with what Jasher was saying, that as soon as these angels came down and started mating with women, men started teaching the blending of these different species. And so you have to ask yourself, if the only reason that the Watchers involved themselves with antediluvian women was because of their physical beauty, what was this other business about blending animals and DNA? And what I tell people is that you have to admit that even if those ancient stories are nothing more than lore, which I don't believe, I believe they were in fact a record, but even if you don't buy that, the metaphorical resemblance to parts, to what's going on today with the move towards transhumanism is astonishing. Even the secular press are referring to these creations as chimeras. And chimera is from Greek mythology. And
well, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Thomas Horn, and we're really talking about this concept of chimera, this blending of the species, and of course the things that are being done today in violation of God's laws. And of course the question arises, how much of this has truly a scientific and how much of it is demonic in origin? Is this a vehicle by which the beings from the other dimension are gaining access to our dimension? And a lot of people, Christians especially, will say that couldn't be true. And yet, of course, we're told over and over again in the scriptures there is another dimension. We should avoid the fortune tellers and mediums and diviners and certainly that these things are not imaginary, they're real, but we should have nothing to do with them. I mean, this Christian faith is a very simple faith. The other faiths, certainly much more complicated, would allow this sort of thing in man's quest to be as God. And that's the big problem today. Are we going to obey God and love God and fear God, or are we going to try to become God? Because when we do, of course, why we risk eternal damnation. Pick the story up there, Tom.
Yeah, and what we do, you know, I was saying that the secular press has picked up on this term chimera to describe these creations that we are now making, and it's because it's metaphorical. It's something that reminds them of the stories of myth, the blending of these different species. But there might be another metaphor here, Dr. Monteith, and that is that the chimera was a hybrid beast in Greek mythology that foreshadowed natural disaster. And I see that as a metaphor, too, that transgenically blending species, living organisms, people, food, animals, that could be it could foreshadow natural disaster. It could be a Pandora's box. But in any case, it was most interesting to me to discover, when I was doing this research and studying modern biotechnology and especially transgenics, that it led me back to ancient history, where it seemed like the same story had unfolded once before, and that the record of that event had been recorded around the world. And then what you were saying a moment ago is, if you also now add ufology and alien abduction and things like that, perhaps this has been happening nonstop throughout history. This record of super intelligent beings who have an interest in cross-blending the species, and at least in some records, it was for the purpose of bringing them from their dimension into ours to incarnate themselves into our reality. And that whatever this activity was about, it was certainly something that immediately brought judgment from God in the days of old.
And really, I think to most people, it's so difficult to take a step from studying the scriptures into looking and seeing what's going on today. And yet, certainly Monsanto and the other genetic engineering companies really are working and taking, say, fish genes and putting them in tomatoes. And they're trying to take genes from human beings and put them into rats and other things. And what are we doing? What is going to be the effect of altering our food crops, our major food crops, with the biological engineering? And all the studies show that this is harmful. Why are we destroying the crops that God gave us to feed men? And now we're finding tremendous shortages of water, droughts, not only in Australia, but here in the United States, and all sorts of strange, certainly physical things that are happening that forebode to me as we're entering some very difficult times. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, you know, it was a few weeks ago, there was a writer for Wired magazine, a woman by the name of Elizabeth Svoboda, and she contacted me and wanted to know if I was willing to provide her some information for an article that she was writing for Wired magazine. And she had came across, she was doing some research for this article, came across an editorial that I had raised, which raised caution about some of this experimentation with crops and things like that. And she wondered if I'd be willing to provide some talking points for the article, because she said that so far all of the scientists that she had talked to were, you know, quote, pretty gung-ho about the practice. And she thought it'd be important to provide some balance to the article. So I thanked her for giving me the invitation to be part of this Wired magazine article, and I sent her a short summary of some of the areas, certainly not all of the areas by far, but some of the areas where I thought that concerns about some of the science ought to be being raised. And thank God, Dr. Monteith, thank God for your radio show. You are one of the few people out there right now who is putting this in the public's mind, and the only thing you can do is just keep beating the drum on some of these issues, because these issues are going to impact this generation in ways that we are not ready for, and people need to know this information. So I take time out of my day to respond to this, Elizabeth.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Thomas Horn, and he's contacted by Elizabeth from Wired Magazine. Now, I don't know how many of our listeners know much about Wired Magazine, but Wired is pretty far out. But that's all right. These are people who are really concerned about what's going on. I've been on their television network, and it might not be something that I would watch, but let me tell you, millions of people, young people, inquiring people, concerned people, confused people are watching Wired television and reading Wired magazine. And so anyway, what happened when you contributed?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're considered to be on the cutting edge on a lot of different technological issues, and they have a massive audience. And so, you know, I get invitations all the time to be on radio shows and things, and frankly, I don't have time. I honestly don't have time to do all the show invitations I get. I always do yours because I love you and I believe in what you do. But with Wired Magazine, I know they have a giant audience. And so I agreed to be interviewed for her. She was writing an article, and the name of the article was Farm Animals Crank Out Drugs. And the word farm was spelled P-H-A-R-M. And they're talking about transgenically altered animals being used for the production of different drugs. And so I agreed to do it. I sent her some concerns. But when the article was published a week later, I was surprised that none of my notes made it into the final story. So I started not to even ask about it, but I thought, yeah, I'm going to. And I sent her back an email, and I said, why was nothing that I, well, none of the issues that I raised added included in this article? And she said, well, actually, she said, I included all of your issues in the article, but they were edited out by the editors at Wired Magazine because they wanted to put a positive slant on the article. That was the bottom line. And that the things that I was raising were concerns, red flags. And so let me just quickly list these for you because your audience would want to know about these. The first thing that I said to her is, what will the long-term impact on the environment and health-related issues be as a result of these farm animals? I mean, we've already seen with genetically modified crops that unpredictable things can occur when living organisms are modified in unnatural ways. There's already good, solid testing that has shown that these things can affect our health. That's one issue. The second issue is that transgenic research that includes inserting animal DNA into humans and human DNA into animals at the embryonic level, which is already happening in the U.S. and different countries around the world, at some point, this can escape its control environment. And if there's anything we've learned...
Hold that thought right there, Tom. I'll be right back. And, of course, Tom is simply pointing out that when you begin taking certain animal genes and putting them into humans or other animals into humans and then human genes into other animals or crops, that this can escape. And this has happened time and again. That's why almost the entire rice crop in California has been contaminated with a genetically modified type of rice, and we're not sure it's even safe to eat or even to feed to animals. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars of lost crops at a time when there's a growing shortage of food in the world. Go ahead there.
That's exactly right, that it can escape its environment. In fact, it will escape its environment. It's really only just a matter of time. We've learned that in our own history, everything from killer bees to the rice crops you're talking about. Anytime we've made anything that we've tried to control, it has a way. I never forget in that movie, you know, Jurassic Park, that silly Ian Malcolm talking about how nature has a way, and it does. It has a way of getting out of its control environment and escaping into the natural environment and then cross-infecting or cross-breeding. And the thing about these genetically modified crops and other genetically modified species that we are creating is that we don't know how those organisms then are going to cross over into the natural species and how it's going to happen. And the thing is, once it is out of the box, it's impossible to put the genie back in the bottle. And it could lead to hybrid viruses, to prion contamination, new diseases, just simply things that we can't foresee or prepare for. That was the second point that I had made to Wired Magazine. The third point that I made to them was that even animal rights activists are raising questions in their area that have to do with the ethics of altering animals in ways that could be, from their point of view, demeaning to those animals. For instance, creating zombie-like animals that grow in feeder labs and gaze off into space from birth until death. Militarized animals that behave in unnatural, unpredictable ways, and what will happen to them when they cross over into the natural species and start contaminating that species. Humanized animals that become self-aware, and this is also already an ethical issue that's been raised about some of the medical some of the research we've done here in the U.S. where we've created mice that have a percentage of their brain that is a human brain. And professor there in California at Stanford University, his name is escaping me, but the professor there that already conducted this research and created mice with 1% human brains wants to now create mice with 100% human brains. And this whole question about what do you do with a mouse that suddenly becomes self-aware and starts questioning its reality and wants to know about God, you then become God, you become God parenti. You suddenly have this responsibility to this creature. I mean, it opens this insane window. Or what about animals that produce human sperm and eggs, which then are used in vitro fertilization to produce a child? And you have to ask, who are the parents? A pair of mice. So it's something that you can't put this in an ethical control box and answer the questions that are going to be being raised. From the animal rights activist point of view. The third thing that I raised to Wired Magazine was questions that involved patenting of transgenic seeds and transgenic animals and transgenic plants and even synthetic life forms by these large corporations like Monsanto that threaten to impact the economy of everything from rural workers to farmers and so many other globalist agenda things that it would take several shows on Radio Liberty, Dr. Monteith, to talk about. But I mean, that's another big piece of this puzzle. And then the fifth issue that I raised to Wired Magazine was the patenting of human genes, which is happening now. Michael Crichton had actually written a nonfiction piece for the New York Times just before I had this interview with Wired Magazine, and I pointed out his article to them in which he was talking about gene patenting is not benign and never will be, in which he was talking about how people in the future could die in the future because they might not be able to afford medical treatment as a result of medicines that are owned by patent holders of specific genes related to those persons, and that some of those gene modifications and patents are actually growing out of this same kind of transgenic research that's being done with these so-called farm, PHARM, animals. The sixth issue that I raised with Wired Magazine was, and these of course are the big issues to me, where is biotechnology ultimately heading in redefining what it means to be a human? Now, I've been a guest on Dr. James Hughes' Change Surfer radio show. Hughes is a leading transhumanist. He's the author of Citizen Cyborg, Why Democratic Societies Must Respond to the Redesigned Human of the Future. He's a professor at Trinity College. And I know that he, together with other transhumanists like Nick Bostrom of Oxford University, are eager about these advances in human genetic modification, including transgenics and other forms of merging of the species. They see that as the next step in human evolution, ultimately leading to post-humanity. They're dead serious, and so are many other people in the military and government that are leading PhDs in universities around the world that are dead serious about this move towards transhumanism. They believe it's going to happen, and frankly, I believe it's going to happen if God doesn't intervene.
Well, look at anything between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity. There's an infinite quality of difference, and I really tremble for my country when I reflect that if God is just, his justice will not sleep forever, and he is going to intervene here in a terrible, terrible way.
And that's what I found in history, was that there was this, but there were a transhumanist in Genesis 6, and it led to judgment from God. And Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah. Did you ever think, Dr. Monteith, did you ever think even 20 years ago that you and I would ever be on a radio show in which we are living in a time where right now, there are human embryos that are being created that are part animal?
I mean, this is so bizarre, so against God's plan for the world. You know, it is indeed frightening, because I do not believe God is going to stand idly by. I think all of these scientists they say, gee, we can do it. Look what we can do. I mean, we have the ability. I mean, it's the ultimate in ego, without realizing, of course, that the real secret to life is not what I can do, but what should I do according to God's plan for my life and humanity? And until man becomes subservient to God, there will never be peace on this earth. I think these people are in revolt against God, and they're going to precipitate God's judgment on this world.
Well, Dr. Monteith, you think that way because you are a great American, and you are a great human, and you are a great Christian, but you do not represent what's happening right now in our leading educational institution.
You're absolutely right. You and I are in a minority, and the rest of the people don't even know what's going on. What was that old adage? 1% of the people make things happen. 2% watch things happen, and the rest of the people, they don't even know anything's happening. But our job is to try to make them understand that this all has a spiritual component. You can't understand this genetic engineering without, of course, understanding the spiritual implications of where the world is headed.
Well, that's why we do what we do, and that's why you have one of the best radio programs in the world. And people need to support you, and they need to make sure that they take care of making sure that your voice is reaching out to the largest possible audience. You know that privately, I mean, I've given you my books. I don't want you to pay me anything for them. I want you to use them. I do that because I believe in you, and I want people that are listening to this radio program to understand that you are one of the few people out there right now, one of the last lights, as far as I'm concerned, that need to be supported. And I hope people will pay attention to that. They need to make sure that you have the largest possible reach in your message, because you're one of the few people left who are willing to talk about issues that are more, they're far more valuable than the average person can even understand.
Well, I really appreciate your help and support. I appreciate getting those books, because I think they have such an important message.
Well, so let me just quickly give you these last two. The seventh thing that I sent to Wired Magazine was redefining basic human rights. Now, Hughes, whose show I've been on, he wants, and this has been in the news just in the last couple of weeks, he wants the creation of transgenic chimps and great apes. He wants these animals uplifted genetically so that they can have the same basic human cognitive ability of a child attending school or something. He wants to do that as a way of proving that certain cognition and not humanness is what ought to be the key to constitutional protections and privileges. And, of course, changes to the intrinsic sanctity of human life could pave the way to doing such things as harvesting organs from people like Terry Schiavo. So that's a whole nother piece of that puzzle, which I sent over to Wired Magazine. And then finally, number eight, was I said to them that it was my view that transhumanist views of biotechnology, including transgenics, are opening the door for a new eugenics and social Darwinism. I mean, the whole idea of transhumanism, even admittedly on their part, is to use the fields of biotechnology, nanotechnology, robotics, mind interfacing, all these other related sciences, to create a superior man, the Übermensch. I mean, the result is going to lead to a classification of persons, the enhanced and the not enhanced. And that's ultimately going to give rise to a new kind of eugenics. So, of course, there's numerous other things that ought to be cautions about genetic modification and transgenic science, which I could have sent to them, and I told her it was a short list. In fact, now if you start adding to the terms that I gave to them, and which I've written about in my books, if you start now adding the terms synthetic biology, where scientists are now cooking up entirely new proteins and living organisms, things that have never existed before in history as far as we know. They were not even part of creation. And they're combining these with nature's DNA in order not only to mingle known species, but we're making something now that, as far as we know, has never existed before. Dr. Monteith, how can we prepare for something like that? What will the impact on the balance of our of nature be, on the balance of our ecosystem be? Or how, what will its impact on our health be? There's no possible way to prepare for what man is doing. And man is doing it now. They're not waiting. And we're not talking about theoretical science. This is happening now. And our president's own former counsel on bioethics, Leon Cass, said that this is the most dangerous technology in the history of the world, and it's placing the animal and human species, as well as all of the living organisms, on the operating table for wholesale redesign, that we are reinterpreting what it means to be an animal, what it means to be a human, what it means to be a superhuman. And then he added this phrase, and I know that this guy's got to have something about God in his heart, because he said, we're also talking about now redefining what it means to be a God. And Professor Francis Fukuyama followed his report in his book, Our Post-Human Future, Consequences of the Biotechnology Revolution, in which he also agreed that this is the most dangerous field in the science of, in the history of man in science, and he thought that it will produce, if man's not careful, it's going to produce an extinction-level event for the human race, a literal Pandora's box. And so I was trying to just get Wired magazine, with their massive audience, to just look at some of these facts that are not my facts. I didn't make them up. These are real issues. These are real issues in this science. And every single one of these points were cut out of their article, and the article actually went on to say, you know, someday if we find a cure to cancer through the merging of these animal species, then nobody will be concerned about it anymore. And I thought, well, how superficial and short-sighted could that comment possibly be? It was just astonishing to me that this article came out, and millions upon millions upon millions of people read this article. And everybody, because you now have an establishment media that's telling people what they ought to think. And that's why what you do, Dr. Monteith, is so important, and I sure hope people can appreciate it.
Well, God's given me the opportunity, and as long as he's given me the opportunity, we're certainly going to take it. I think if people will stop and contemplate what's taking place today, man has replaced God, at least like man would like to think he's replaced God. But it's just, I got to tell you something, it's not going to happen. But he is, of course, interfering with the very essence of what God has created and intent upon destroying it. And then, of course, with the idea he's going to be able to improve it. But does anybody really think that man can improve upon God? I mean, these men must have tremendous egos to honestly think that. And of course, I fear that we're unleashing things, you know, on this earth that will have profound impact for generations to come, and are going to bring God's judgment. And I certainly think that what you're saying is absolutely right. I think we are right on the edge of cataclysmic changes, and the average person out there has no idea what's going on. And there's so many things that are happening, and yet nobody can connect the dots. They all seem to be isolated little things, but they're not isolated. Man is challenging God's supremacy, and God will not be mocked.
Well, I hope that we've connected a lot of the dots in our new book, Nephilim Stargates, the Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers, because we actually talk about the science and also the history behind what did happen in those ancient days, where these super intelligences rebelled against God, mingled animal and human DNA, and led to the epic of the flood, in which God wiped out humanity as a result of what was happening through intermarriage and the spreading of that corrupted DNA. And now we ask the questions about where this might be leading now. And what I would say is that it doesn't really matter what a person's worldview is. Anybody that's listening to this program tonight, they could be religious, they could be atheist, they could be secular humanist, whatever. Everything that is happening in biotech now ought to be being viewed with attentiveness. And that's not to say that there might not be some benefits to humanity that come out of biotech. There could be. But it is to say that on this one side, at least, where we're talking about the unnatural alteration of living organisms, that could have far-reaching adverse effects on the environment, and everything we're learning so far in genetically modified crops tell us not only could it have, it already is have, and it's probably going to be something much more than we are capable of dealing with. And because of that, there should have been legislation already enacted that at least, you know, to whatever extent we can try to control some of the madness, it would be happening. But it's not happening. And we're racing forward now with genetically modified crops. We're funding transgenic animal-human embryos because we think these creatures are going to somehow open the door to a better evolution of the species and a medical salvation for our health. And you started out this program earlier on talking about moth genes now that are being fused with potatoes, pigs that are being given human growth genes, fish that are being implanted with cattle growth genes, tomatoes that are being bred with flounders. And what most people don't realize is that, as far as the food parts of it, the FDA...
Hold on, I'll be right back. Go right ahead, pick the story up.
Well, the FDA that is charged with protecting, our concerns as a society. I mean, they allow the producers of these products to do their own testing, and then they accept those reports from those corporations at face value that the biotech creations that they're making are safe. And yet, independent studies, which have been suppressed and have been the subject of lawsuits which have dragged them into courts and tried to exhaust their financial capacity to be able to support the evidence behind what their scientific research has led to, such as R. Pat Puste and some of the other people who found that the rats that were eating some of the byproducts of some of these genetically modified crops were developing all kinds of health issues, and that their offspring were also developing health issues. These people have been suppressed. And in the end, I hope, Dr. Monteith, that we don't learn what I call the Brundlefly lesson. You think about that old movie, The Fly, and there was this scientist named Seth Brundle who was conducting these teleportation experiments, and he accidentally has his DNA combined with a common housefly during one of those teleportation experiments. And soon afterward, He becomes the transhumanist dream come true, a superhuman. He's got lightning quick agility. His senses start getting heightened. He starts developing superhuman power. He's got the sexual proclivities of an African lion. But then something else starts happening, something unexpected, and he starts transforming into this hideous monster, and ultimately he's destroyed. Now, Jeff Goldblum, who was the actor who played Seth Brundle in the remake of that film, he also starred as Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park, and he was a guy who subscribed to the chaos theory. He certainly was not portrayed as a Christian. He was an evolutionist who subscribed to the chaos theory. And when he's being chased down the road by a giant T-Rex, he wants to know who in the world thought this was a good idea to bring this extinct species back. And the whole point being that if evolution decided to selectively remove these organisms millions of years ago, then maybe there was a reason why. But what I would say to people of faith is, if there was a reason why the Creator, God Almighty, put a barrier between the species and commanded that each of these species would recreate after their own kind, that when these powerful angels, known as the Watchers, rebelled against God, and came down and started trying to mingle their species with the human race.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, Tom, go right ahead. And
when these powerful angels came down and tried to mingle their species with the human race, it ultimately and instantly led to the judgment of God, the great fiat of the flood that wiped out everything except for Noah and his offspring, who evidently were the only remaining persons on Earth who were pure of that DNA contamination that had happened as a result of what was going on with these Watchers and these women, and then over a long period of time, interspecies, just breeding of humans, that DNA had been corrupted. Now, obviously, we don't have time on your show tonight to talk about the background behind that, but the point is that I hope we don't learn that lesson again, that these things have a way of getting out of the box, and when they get out of the box, they can affect the environment of the Earth.
Well, I think we're out of time, Tom. Do you have a website you'd like to get out before we let you go?
Certainly. If anybody wants to find out more, they can go to Raiders. It's just like the football team, R-A-I-D-E-R-S. The full name of the website is RaidersNewsUpdate.com. RaidersNewsUpdate.com. And they can find out more about the new book there, Nephilim Stargates. The other book, The Ahriman Gate, you already have that in possession.
Right.
They can get that directly from you. I want to encourage people to support Dr. Monteith and his radio programs. He's one of the most important voices out there right now, and I hope people know that.
God bless you. Thanks so very much, Tom.
God bless you, Dr. Monteith. Thank you for having me on again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that was, of course, Tom Horn. I hope you enjoy him. We always enjoy having Tom with us. Well, of course, this is the time when we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and so if you'd like to help us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and certainly join the Radio Liberty family if you'd like to, or certainly get our newsletter, or if you'd like, of course, to get a free copy of our newsletter, our catalogs, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And as Tom was talking this evening, I was reminded of the opening to The Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of reason, it was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief, it was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. We are living in truly historic times. And of course, if you go back and read what Charles Dickens wrote when he used the term light and darkness, the L had a capital L, the D had a capital D. Actually suggesting deity, a deity of light, the deity of darkness, that eternal battle between good and evil. Most people would have read that and never even understood. But that is the battle that is going on today. And, of course, where are the people calling people to repentance, calling for a great revival, calling for people to fear God and understand our job is to fear God and keep His commandments. Our job is to love God and keep His commandments. Our job is to obey God and keep His commandments. And God is going to bring a terrible judgment on this world if there's not another revival, if the people don't turn back to Him. And I don't know what it's going to take, but our job is to reach people and to encourage them. Well, anyway, this is Dr. Stan here. And so we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and pray for our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision, for our protection, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And remember our number, it's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a copy of the Ahriman Gate, Tom's material, well, give us a call. It's available through Radio Liberty, and as well as his other books on spiritual warfare, the gods who walk among us. And believe me, they are there. And then, of course, alien intervention. There are alien objects, but they're truly demonic.